Good morning.
Good morning.
Our opening reading comes from one of us, the Reverend Dr. John Haynes Holmes. He wrote these words a couple of years ago, 106 years ago, in 1912. I discovered him in 1960. Permit his words to help us link principle one, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, with the dignity of work today. Poverty. In this age, as in every age, in our country as in every country, is primarily due to the fact of social injustice. That employment cannot be had by those who are ready to work. That employment, even when regular, is not paid enough to enable the faithful and efficient workman to guard against illness, to protect his widow from dependence, or to promote for his old age. That insufficient wages force thousands of families to crowd into unhealthy tenements, to eat insufficient food, and to wear insufficient clothing, thus paving the way for physical weakness and disability. That accidents rob the wage earners without compensation from society. That taxes are inequitable, throwing the chief burden upon the poor instead upon the rich. That natural resources, which are the basis of all wealth, are in the hands of a few instead of under the control of a society at large, and are thus exploited for the benefit of the few and not for the sake of common welfare. That the distribution of wealth is grossly unfair and disproportionate. In the final analysis, that society is organized upon a basis of injustice and not of justice, and is permeated by the spirit of selfishness and not of love. Our local paper, the Virginia Gazette, features the last word for anonymous comments. You might have encountered and engaged with it. Recently, some folk have written that if workers in our hospitality retail industries could not afford to live here, they should commute. And if they had an education, they could afford to live here. Susie and I were reading the last word. Yes, we read it. We read the last word. And discovered a compassionate and realistic response to those who disparage and dismiss the workers who keep our hospitality retail industries operating.
Affordable housing. While a commenter is correct in stating that if you can't afford to live where you work, you commute to your job, he or she fails to mention the cost of that commute in time and money. Generally, the more it costs for transportation to your job, the cheaper your housing must be. I make the same hourly wage today as I did 10 years ago. Then I commuted 50 plus miles to my job in Williamsburg, but my housing cost was low as I lived with my family. Now my housing costs are 80% or so of my income, but fortunately, I have only a 3-mile commute. The problem comes when your housing costs plus transportation is more than your income. That is why there is such a need for affordable housing in this area. Those who insist that, quote, education and hard work, unquote, are the keys to success are perpetuating one of the greatest myths of our time. I have 9 years of post-secondary education, and I have worked hard for more than 20 years. Yet, as I said, my wages haven't changed. Although I have applied for countless jobs the last few years, I have received little to no response from would-be employers. I have also noticed that the jobs requiring the hardest work pay the lowest wages. So, if this myth were anywhere near true, I should be very wealthy indeed and able to afford a much more expensive home.
Thank you. Sometimes in the last word, you do find statements of the reality of the situations of others. Can you feel the strength and resolve of the writer of the last word article that Susie just shared with us? She or he had stated the reality of her work situation, and therefore her life. She or he is facing the realities of poverty, as spoken so powerfully by Dr. Holmes in our opening reading. Are there support systems to help him or her in our resource-rich communities? What paths can she or he trek to find resources to provide guidance and encouragement? How will she or he commemorate Labor Day? Can or should WUU be or become a resource? Individuals and families receiving a minimum wage are being destroyed daily because they cannot afford the basic essentials to exist: shelter, food, clothing, and health care. Doesn't even include transportation and child care, let alone college funds, investment programs, and all other factors we consider our basic rights to accumulate. Connected to and supportive of minimum wage are right-to-work laws. These laws are manifestations of slavery, wherein if folk didn't work, they were denied the right to exist. Whatever the minimum wage, it makes it legal for employers to pay the least they can for wages as required by law, but pay nothing for benefits such as sick leave, annual leave, health care, etc. Why Labor Day? Continuing the "as if I were you" focus, let's weave the dignity of work into the fabric of UU's first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Set before the backdrop of the labor movement and the inception of Labor Day, let's look at a few things some key organizations are engaged in to address the devastating realities of economic oppression and discover the power of sympathy, empathic synergism to create a new labor way. Permit a quick overview as if I were you. There are those six steps toward realizing as if I were you: exposure, communication, interaction, acceptance, and transformation. We are first exposed to other persons by their rash, race, age, sex, gender, handicap, disability. We communicate with the persons about obvious topics: sports, weather, WUU. We begin to interact as we share needs, values, feelings, beliefs, past experiences, future expectations. We accept each other based on our exposure and interaction. Lastly, we are transformed by the other persons as we become as if we were they, showing the results of our commitment to be changed by them. Think with me for a few moments. Is there a common impetus, thread of intent in the creation of the seven principles of UU and the creation of labor unions? Be calm. I'm not engaged in any revisionist foolhardiness, nor attempting to undermine anyone's separation of sacred and profane. In asking if there were, I'm just trying to entice you to look at our principles and labor unions through a new lens, the common lens of empathy, empathic synergism, and in so doing, appreciate the power and presence of unions in helping workers find a sense of purpose, a clear guidance, a confirmation of self. Why did UUs feel the imperative to create the seven principles? If we look closely at them, they appear to be statements of commitment in the face of life's realities. With our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, UUs are committed to treat every person as possessing inherent worth and dignity. We do that by interacting and accepting who they are and opening ourselves to becoming transformed by their presence. Applying the same analytic to the other seven principles, hopefully soon there will be eight, this can be done in the quietude of your special spaces, probably at home. Labor unions were created in order to help workers with life-related realities such as low pay, poverty, unsafe and sanitary working conditions, health and safety, long hours, medical care, medical and mental care, health care, and other situations. Workers often had problems with their bosses as a result of membership in the unions. Unions are the living, breathing organisms that embrace and extol the worth and dignity of every person. In the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, the labor movement was a principal force that transformed misery and despair into hope and progress. Out of its bold struggles, economic and social reform gave birth to unemployment insurance, old age pensions, government relief for the destitute, the weekend, and above all, new wage levels that meant not were mere survival, but a tolerable life. The captains of industry did not lead this transformation. They resisted it until they were overcome. When in the 30s, the wave of union organization created over our nation, it carried to secure shores not only itself, but the whole of society. Hopefully, I might have enticed a couple to look at our principles and labor unions as having a similar driving force. I said I would talk about three organizations and their commitment to the worth and dignity of every person, their commitment to their operation assuring that the outcomes benefit individuals and societies. The first one I picked is Unitarian Universalist Association. And we look at back in 2014, where we were talking, UUA had us looking very closely at escalating economic inequality and what we could do about it. At the UU General Assembly in 2014, escalating economic inequality was chosen as the congregational study action issue to be studied and a focus of political action to this year, to 2018. Remember the common read behind the kitchen door, in which the devastating treatment of workers in the restaurant industry was the focus? Hate to tell you, 2018, different day, same conditions. In 2014, David K. Johnston, who retired from the New York Times after a long career covering the beat on taxes, tax evasion, and the IRS, provided a brisk tour through some of the themes in his new book, Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at the Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. The talk was sponsored by Unitarian Universalist Committee on Socially Responsible Investing. The statistics show 4 years ago, even more devastating, as the top 10% were parsed into the 0.1% and the 9.9%. In Matthew Stewart's article, The Birth of the New Aristocracy, The Atlantic, June 2018, Stewart says the 9.9% are working as the enablers of the 0.1% and are engaged in the greed-based wealth accumulation that denies the 90% access to wages, benefits, and jobs. Johnston pointed out, we treat people who do the work that makes the investment variable like they're a cost. We treat people like they're a cost, a bad thing. Since the late 1970s, we have been seeing the rising returns to capital and the decreasing returns to labor. In other words, the capital owners keeping more of the profit rather than sharing it with the people who made their businesses grow. The upshot of this is that the upper 10% are capturing more of America's wealth than at any time since the Depression. In another way he expressed this in a chart, Johnston showed that in 1973, the year income levels peaked for the bottom 90% of Americans, that group got 2/3 of the annual wealth pie, while the top 10% got the remaining 1/3. By 2005, the bottom 90% were getting 51%, while the top 10% were getting 49% of the total wealth created. One factor in this has been the decline in unions, Johnston continues. In 1993, more than 1/3 of private production workers were unionized, which drove up wages. Friends, that's a good thing. And the presence of unions drove up wages elsewhere as non-union shops competed for talent. Over the past 25 years, unionization has dropped to less than half the former strength, taking wage pressure off employers and reducing wages across the board. UUA also has a strong posture on community investing, where that they will join in with congregations in order to afford financial services, financial education, loans for first-time home buyers, affordable housing development, and micro and small business development, community services, and venture capital financing, that relationship between individual congregations and. We know that in the action of immediate witness affirmed at the 2018 General Assembly, the delegates of that 57th Assembly did not adopt any the proposed actions of immediate witness, but affirmed that the issues had value and should be considered. One of the issues that had value and needed to be considered was join the Poor People's Campaign. Now, the Poor People's Campaign was organized by the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber in North Carolina. He transitioned from president of the North Carolina Conference of the National Association of the Advancement of Colored People to one of two lead facilitators of the Poor People's Campaign. He did that night in 2017. Frankly, I had hoped to join him and the work in North Carolina by spending a month in Raleigh. But Susan's illness and the death of a family member changed my plans. Moral Mondays on Dog Street, that I initiated in 2014, has linked with the Poor People's Campaign and advocate the 12 justice mandates of the Poor People's Campaign. Likewise, I have had the pleasure of participating in planning efforts to create the Poor People's Campaign focus in the Commonwealth and look forward to similar work at WUU. The Poor People's Campaign work, in a concise statement, enlist moral activists in the fight against systemic racism, poverty, child poverty, extremism, denial of health care, voter suppression, environmental justice, xenophobia, unchecked militarism, discrimination against LGBTQ people, sexism, and our current moment in history. The third agency that I wish to cite for you is the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. In 2012, Ms. Kim Bobo, the Executive Director of International Worker Justice, was working with UUA staff on economic inequalities. She was leading the way for wage theft to be defined and to develop strategies for addressing the pervasive intrusion throughout our nation. Kim is the author of the definitive work on wage theft and has publications on interfaith organizing and advocacy. A personal note, I'm a member of the Virginia Interfaith Center Board, and I'm chair of the Board Development Committee. On February 10, this very same Kim Bobo, who has this relationship with UUA on helping to end economic injustice, was hired as the executive director for the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. I have two distinct moments of joy with her being selected. I was a member of the search committee, and I nominated her to the center board to become the new executive director. One of the constituent services offered by the center is Congregational Partners Initiative. Wayne Moyer and I presented a proposal to our WUU board requesting congregational partner affiliation at the August board meeting. It was approved unanimously. More about this partnership will be forthcoming. Each year, the UUA awards a minister for the sermon that was the most convincing to get folk to invest, to provide financial support. This is a way that UUA encourages from the pastoral level engagement to get folk excited. February the 11th, 2018, the Reverend Dr. Justin Osterman got the award. And I want to share with you, in conclusion, some of his comments in his sermon. I want you, in your mind, to link back to 2012, 106 years ago, when the Reverend Dr. John Haynes Holmes was talking about poverty. Reverend Osterman, yesterday I joined thousands of other citizens and several dozen members of this congregation, as well as other Unitarian Universalists from around the state on a march in the state capitol. We marched, we sang, we waved our signs, we made a statement with our bodies, and we did it because these are unprecedented times. Yes, it rained on us a little, but those clouds overhead were nothing compared to the storm that is gathering around our democracy. A little over 9 years ago, some of us took to the streets in celebration because we believed the dream might come true in our time. Not the American dream, but Dr. King's dream. You know that dream, judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. But today I wake to the American reality of systemic racism, economic marginalization, environmental devastation, increasing militarization, mass incarceration, human exploitation, civic degradation, political polarization, and the criminalization of immigration, all of which is being sanctioned, promoted, legalized by the people in expensive suits with poor judgment. People who are getting rich while our nation heads toward moral and spiritual bankruptcy. And the people who are inflicting these ills on our nation have wrapped themselves in our country's flag and anointed themselves with the false fragrance of bad religion. And the only thing that will reveal them to the phony patriots wearing the odor of oppression is committed people of good faith, high principles, and fierce resolve. Now, more than ever, our city, our country, our state, our nation needs a strong, clear voice of liberal religion to counter the fearmongers and the faith leaders whose path to the future is a road to ruin. Our society needs a clear, confident, alternative religious voice today, speaking up for the powerless, speaking out against injustice, and speaking to the next generation of Americans, offering a different spiritual message that proudly proclaims the belief in one human family, one spirit that unites all, and care for this earthly home we share, a faith that champions democracy and denounces demagoguery, that speaks out for peace, justice, social responsibility, our shared human dignity, strength through diversity, grounded spirituality, and honesty, integrity, humility, and wisdom as the fundamental virtues of real leaders. This congregation should be that voice, could be that voice, if you really want to be. Dr. Osterman was speaking to the congregation in Raleigh. I think his words are speaking to the congregation in Williamsburg. I conclude, WU is a congregation positioned to create a center for work, a center for justice as we move forward. Hopefully we will intentionally be guided by UU principles and have them influence the form and function of our physical presence. Who knows, someday we might have workers come here to organize. Local leaders come to discover compassionate labor practices. Felons find a place for economic and personal well-being. LGBTQ discover a safe haven of respect and dignity. Immigrants receiving legal and social support and sanctuary. And all of us find a place to renew our commitment to being visible and vocal for justice everywhere. May it be so.